Guardians taking on the Tigers, looking for a win. They're looking to bring on this guy. He's a master of baseball, a master of the Guardians. Zach Meisel, the master from The Athletic, joins us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Hello, Zach.
God, what a way to start the day, to hear your guys' voices.
We going to win today? Excuse me. You are a Big J journalist. Are the Guardians going to win today? Ah.
I'm going to say yes.
Whoa! Oh, all right! Yes! All right! Here we are. Okay, thanks for the interview.
I think they win in four. How about that?
Whoa! Oh, Zach Meisel hanging him over the fence! Tell me why.
Well, I just wanted you guys to have a nice, catchy headline to put with the segment. No, I think they've looked like the better team. I think the bats will get going a little bit, and I think this is a little more difficult for Detroit to piece together 18 innings. You know, this is the only time during the series where you don't have an off day between games, and I think the Guardians will have a short leash with Alex Cobb, but it sounds crazy. Like, I still like Cleveland's lineup better than I like Detroit's lineup, and I think that'll matter here. I think the Guardians will score some runs today, and I think that puts the pressure on the Tigers, and then in a situation tomorrow where you presumably have Tanner Bibee on the mound, and the Tigers are trying to scrap together nine more innings out of a bullpen that's going to get used a lot today. I don't know. The other thing is, like, you kind of have to win in four. Not to say you can't win a game that Scooble pitches in, but you don't want to get to that scenario if you don't have to.
Zach Meisel with us right now on the hotline. What do you think of the job that your rookie manager has done through the first two games of the series?
I think it's been pretty good. I would have had the bullpen going a little earlier. I was surprised Matthew Boyd even got, 4 2/3 innings. But it worked out. And I think you've seen the script. You've seen the formula. It's Emmanuel Clase doesn't hang a slider. It's maybe the script worked perfectly twice in a row. So it's everything we thought it would be. It's going to be leaning on the bullpen, especially those four guys that have carried them all season. You just got to get some timely hits. And, you know, I think it's going to be especially interesting to see the lineup here, knowing that Detroit's going to have to mix and match their way through nine innings. You know, who's going to be the player who steps up? Is it David Fry? Is it Lane Thomas? Is it Kyle Manzardo? Is it just one of those non-stars who you need to put in the right positions to succeed? And especially if Detroit's going to go, you know, switching back and forth between lefties and righties and whatnot. I think that lineup construction and the decision-making of when to pinch hit, who to hit where, that's going to be critical the next 2 days.
Do we have any reasons? Everyone's throwing out, he threw three sliders in a row, and one of them didn't do exactly what it was supposed to. How Clase goes from being so darn dominant all year. Was it a different approach? Was it the pressure getting to him? Should he have walked the guy in that situation? What did you think?
I think there are a lot of excuses you can make for him, or explanations you can try to, or conclusions you can try to draw. And the bottom line, and he said this, is he just didn't have good command. And whatever the reason is for that, you know, he's overamped, or it's just one of those days. Like, some pitchers go through that, even the best in the world. And I think he just made a mistake. Sometimes it just happens. Like, it's not because he pitched Saturday in a 7-run game. Like, then he would have had 10 days off in between outings, and you didn't know for sure you were going to need him in game two. Like, it was good for him to pitch in game one. It's not because, you know, he came in the eighth inning. Like, he's done that before. Cade Smith pitched in parts of three different innings in game two. Like, we don't need to make excuses here. He just didn't have his best stuff, and he missed with a pitch. That slider was supposed to be in the dirt. It was supposed to be trying to get him to swing and miss. And I think there was a little bit of trepidation about, with a runner on third, and Carpenter's a really good hitter. He's excellent against righties. But not wanting to throw a cutter without your best command, and it results in, you know, we had seen like a bloop single or a broken bat type deal that scores that run. So he was looking for the swing and miss. and he just did not put that pitch where it needed to be.
Zach Meisel joining us from The Athletic. Who is the pressure on? Who is the pressure on here?
I think it's on Cleveland, but I think it depends on what you're looking at. Like, the pressure's on Cleveland because the Tigers, no one expected them to get to this point. So the pressure's always going to be on the Guardians in this series. The Tigers are playing with house money. Their fans are going to come to this game today thinking, October 9th, like, we had booked a family vacation for this back in July. So the Tigers are in a good spot here. But I both of these teams, I think, understand, you know, you look around baseball right now, like, this thing is wide open. Like the Mets are the closest team to a World Series right now, and no one expected. Like, I thought they were eliminated, like, two different times last week. So it's wide open, and I think instead of pressure, I think it just fuels these teams to see, like, oh, my gosh, like, you know, the Yankees could be on the brink tonight or tomorrow, and next thing you know, it's like you're playing the Royals maybe for a chance to go to the World Series. Like, I think all these teams kind of realize, like, it's right there for the taking. Like, crazier things have happened than the Tigers getting the World Series this year or the Guardians getting the World Series this year. So I think there's pressure on the Guardians just from the standpoint of they're probably supposed to win this series. But I think it's more just looking at the scene here and realizing that, like, if you play well, if you do what you're supposed to do, you know, a lot can happen.
Would you expect a situation in a tight game once again, especially if you are maybe up a run where Class A is going to be asked to get more than just three outs?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, if Carpenter hits that to the wall instead of over the wall, no one's talking about Class A not looking like himself and not having good command, right? So, to me, the issue was, how are you letting Jake Rogers and Trey Sweeney at the bottom of Detroit's order get on base against you? Like, it's Emmanuel Class A. Like, you had one of the best relief seasons of all time. So that's the bigger issue, is letting those guys that he should just overpower get on base. And, you know, they're going to stand by him and say that it was just an off night that happens to people, and you got to get back out there. I mean, no matter what happened in game two, like, if your options are Emmanuel Class A and Eli Morgan because your other top relievers have pitched, you're going to go with Class A for that extra out if you need it. So I think they're fully prepared for him to, you know, you never know what the situation is going to be, but for him, and he's so efficient, he can certainly go multiple innings. So I don't think they would hesitate.
Zach Meisel joining us here on the show. Did you... what is something that you think that Stephen Vogt can correct here over this next game? And I would say next two games here in this series.
I don't know about correct. I mean, they need more than three hits. They got to score some runs. How advantageous was it? Just think about how much calmer you felt watching game one because they got out to an early lead. I know they're not going to score five runs in the first inning every night, but just a couple runs to support that bullpen as they take the ball from whoever's starting is such a difference maker. You know, think about the tension you felt watching inning after inning, and Noel makes the throw to possibly save a run later in that inning, and Kwan makes the diving catch, I think, to save potentially a run. So it's just like you're living and dying on every pitch, and if the offense can just scratch across a couple early runs, that makes such a difference. And we've seen it. Like, Class A aside, I mean, Cade Smith was incredible again in game two. Tim Herron and Hunter Gaddis did their job. So I think if you're Stephen Vogt, you're not, and you've heard him say this, like, he's not going to abandon ship just because one guy maybe didn't have his best stuff.
Would you have pinched hit for John Kenzie Noel in the eighth?
That was to lead off the inning, right?
Yeah.
I actually had this debate with Jason Lloyd. I feel like if it was two outs, I'd probably let Noel hit for sure because it's just one swing of the bat. To lead off an inning, like, you'd be fine with a Brendan. Like, the options there are probably Noel, home run, or strikeout. And with Brennan, it's, you know, it's basically everything but those. So
okay,
I guess it makes – I understand it leading off an inning with two outs. I would have just let Noel hit.
So if it were to just end where he was maybe at the back end of the inning, then it wouldn't have been a problem that he would have been still hitting?
Yeah, because at that point, like, you're probably not piecing together a rally. So just let me take the risk that, you know, on the 7% chance Noel runs into one and hits it over the fence. That makes sense there. But, you know, the odds are he's not going to do that. And starting an inning, you're, you know, you don't want to start with one out.
Do you think the game four starter for the Guardians will be impacted at all with who wins today?
No, Vogt wouldn't tip his hand, actually, yesterday. He said he'd have an answer for us.
We play it. They said they haven't even thought about game four.
Nope, not even thinking about it. Boom.
Yeah, I don't really understand why it wouldn't be Tanner Bibee. The only thing would be, like, if they wanted to start an opener, and that would only be because Bibee has pitched against them, five times this season? And go look at Bibee threw, 13 sinkers in game one. He doesn't throw a sinker. He threw, a handful all season. But he had to unleash something new against the Tigers because they've seen him so much. So I understand if there's a little hesitation just because it's like, oh, my God, this is going to be the sixth time they've seen him. And, you know, there's no surprises anymore. So maybe they want, a lefty to start in the first inning and then bring Bibee out of the bullpen. But, he's never done that before, and that might be getting too cute. So I would think it's Tanner Bibee. We'll know for sure at, 12:45.
Zach Meisel joining us on the show. What were your thoughts on Terry Francona taking the managing job over with the Cincinnati Reds?
Yeah, not surprised that he's back in the game. A little surprised at the destination and the timing. I knew he didn't want the headache of the big market with the expensive players and the team that anything short of a World Series is a failure. But I'm surprised by this. I don't know, Cincinnati, it seems like an odd fit. It makes sense. They have a young team. They could be a solid team next season. I just kind of figured he'd go to Atlanta maybe if their manager retires in the next year or two, because that's been a conversation, or he'd wait for the A's to move to Vegas and manage them in a few years if they were ready to finally spend money. It was interesting, listening to that press conference. I felt like I could recite the entire thing because it was all those same things we heard for 11 years. And then it makes you realize he was here a really long time, and you don't typically see that, not just in baseball, but in sports. I mean, you don't see coaches last somewhere for longer than a decade. So not surprised that by the middle of the summer he felt that itch again to get back in, but I certainly would not have guessed that it would be the Reds in the first week of October.
Zach, you're a wonderful man, and we thank you very much for the time. All the very best to you, all the very best to yours, and we hope to talk to you again soon.
Ken, I know you've been beaten over the head with this, but just think.
What?
You could be saying your famous phrase in 2 days.
I'm not saying it. Somebody else will say it. Well, they'll play it enough that people will think I'm saying it. I'm not going to say it, Zach.
It's waffle doodle time?
No. You know what he thinks I'm going to say. I ain't going to say it. It ain't happening. It ain't coming out of my mouth. No. What do you say to that, Zach?
We'll see. You're going to feel the pressure. You're going to want to do it.
Yeah, I will see you in hell before I actually say it. Zach, thank you for the time.
See you there. Love you, boys. Bye.
Yeah, imagine, we love you, too.
Naylor back in the Bronx.
That's fine. I ain't saying it. They've played the Yankees since that series. I'm not saying that.
Playoff game, a little different.
No, I learned my lesson. I'm going to have enough on my plate with old Goofball in there and his fake fandom. So I don't need to sit there and say those words, which I'm not going to say, which Owen is waiting for me to say so he can record it and play it and tell everybody I said it.
I don't need to worry.
I know you already have the clip.
I'm just
going to
have it.
Give me the Yankees. Yeah, turn my mic back on. Give me the Yankees. No. It was one of the dumber things I've said on The Fan. And you think about the territory that brings in.
You've said a lot of dumb things on The Fan.
I've said a lot of smart things, too, but nobody actually wants to pay attention to those.
You just said dumb things.
Name 8 dumb things I've said on The Fan.
Give me the Yankees.
That's 1 through 7.
The other one was the Knicks.
The other one, that they were going to take Sam Darnold. They took Baker Mayfield. Of course, that was I was used as a pawn in that plan to get the leaks out of the building. Yep.
Guys, do you want Ken to guarantee a win for the Cleveland Browns?
Yeah,
guarantee a win. You, Ken. We need to hear it. Five-year-old.
Let's go.
I can't turn down the key.
Let's go.
I guarantee a win.
I guarantee they're going to beat the Raiders.
I could keep going.
I'm not guaranteeing a victory. I'm just saying that I'm not going to say bring on the you-know-whos. Ain't going to happen. That's all. I would go with Matt Boyd. I would go with Tanner Bibee tomorrow. Win or lose. And then, if they lose, you got to go with Tanner Bibee tomorrow. What am I saying?
I'm in agreement with
Zach
on that
one. Win or lose, Tanner Bibee. And then I'm going to go with Matt Boyd and play the odds. But he says we're going to win in 4. So it's looking very, very, very good for today. Did you believe that it was all Woody Johnson's decision to fire Robert Saleh over in New York?
Not only his.
Oh, you think he did? But he said it was only his decision.
Yeah, I mean, the stories that are coming out that he originally, New York Post, I think, says that they just wanted to fire Hackett. And then Rodgers stepped in. I mean, do you believe that?
Yeah, I believe Aaron Rodgers runs the organization.
I just imagine he'd also want to fire Saleh.
Aaron Rodgers would want to fire Saleh?
No, the owner.
Oh, no, I just thought it was Aaron Rodgers' decision that I don't know what it is, but he just doesn't want to be with him anymore, and that was it. So maybe. the whole wanting to hug thing and the shove-off thing probably was actually a glimpse into their relationship together, which I just thought he marched by the orders. More on that coming up in a moment. But start your game day with the Fan Bud Light Tailgate Show with Jonathan Peterlin, live from the Neon Room at MGM Northfield Park this Sunday, starting at 10 a.m. through kickoff at 1 p.m. Make the Fan Bud Light Tailgate Show part of your game day routine. On the radio home of the Cleveland Browns, 92.3 The Fan, it's presented by Valley Automotive Group, the Buckeye Law Group, and Sal's Heating and Cooling, Plumber and Sewer. Get details at 92.3thefan.com. So I said that yesterday. I said, oh man, Robert Saleh must have spoke up against his boss, Aaron Rodgers. And plenty of people went, excuse me. And I went, yeah, I know there are plenty of parallels that you can draw here. I wasn't drawing them, but you can, and maybe rightfully so. Do you or do you not believe that that they could go out there on Sunday, and if Deshaun Watson plays terribly, they would sit Deshaun Watson, that Kevin could sit Deshaun Watson? Because now there has been a firing. This is a team over in New York that still wants to make the playoffs. I don't know how possible it is. Still want to make the playoffs. They fired their head coach. They marched him out with security. And here we are here in Cleveland at 1-4, and we are staring 1-5 dead in the hairy eyeball with them getting 2 wide receivers back and us not having an offense right now.
Yeah, I think this is the game. I said there was a natural time for Watson to get benched in the 3rd quarter where the coach could still have a little bit of plausible deniability, like, hey, we wanted to get him out of there. He was getting killed. He was getting really banged up. It was tough to see him getting up. We couldn't protect him. And for all those reasons, it was a blowout. Like, I thought they could have done it there. I was surprised they didn't. Now, looking at this game against Philly, to maintain whatever order you might have left in the locker room, I think this is the week that if it is looking like it was last week, I think he's getting benched. And I do think they would go to Jameis.
And you think Kevin makes that decision?
Does he make that decision
at his own peril?
Well, I wonder if they've already talked about it. So I wish it was his decision.
You think they haven't?
But I wonder if already they've talked about, hey, if things go bad this week, if he has to ask permission, that's bad to begin with, but they collaborate. They collaborate on everything. We already established earlier this week, I don't like that, if that's the setup.
If you were, I can understand what you're saying there, but if you were management, could you not see the reasoning why you would sit him by now? Like, there's no way you could sit there in a meeting and say, absolutely not. It's unthinkable he's going to play.
I mean, yeah, there's certain realities to how a locker room, how an organization works. And most people around the NFL, you've heard everybody talk about this over the last few days. You have ex-coaches, you have ex-players. Have we played what one of the Washington Commanders said about your quarterback?
Oh, we are more than welcome to play that. Thank you very much for bringing that up, my friend.
I mean, when you are hearing this kind of talk about the quarterback that a team is facing week to week, listen to this.
Yeah, go ahead.
from looking at your timelines between you and Deshaun Watson, I think you've faced him at least once before in your career, earlier in your career. Talk about how he looked then as opposed to how he looked this past weekend at Northwest Stadium. What's the difference there?
I'm being honest, he looks like a player who has stuff going on above the shoulders. You know what I mean? There's definitely a confidence thing that's been going on. And, you know, I always tell people this. It doesn't matter how great of a player you are. If you don't have confidence, you're not a good player. I would say that's just the biggest difference. I mean, I think physically, obviously, he's probably not as athletic as he was 6, 7 years ago, however long it was. But I still think he has that potential. But I don't know. Football is a weird game, man. If mentally you're not good up top, like, you're going to be weird. You're not going to be confident. You're not going to be playing free. You're going to be thinking. You're going to be reacting slower. So I would probably say that's probably the biggest difference for him right now. Like I always say, when it rains, it pours. When things are going bad, you're frustrated. You're getting beat down in the media all day. It's frustrating. And that's all that was. You just saw frustrations boil over. Their offense wasn't having success. It's a lot, man. It's a lot. I mean, you deal with a lot as an NFL quarterback.
Well, he looked lost, too, man, I thought.
Yeah.
I'm curious.
That's Jonathan Allen, Commanders defensive tackle, one of the best ones in the business, on the Sports Junkies on 106.7 The Fan in Washington yesterday.
Kenny, when the other team's players are saying, after they played him, too.
Without fear of retribution.
Yeah, they know they're not going to play Deshaun Watson again this year, and so that's when they can speak freely. Like, you probably wouldn't hear a Bengals player say that or a Ravens player. When you hear that, it's over. And so it's over because if they're thinking that, what do you think people in your locker room are thinking? And they just can't say it. Like, we had Rodney McLeod here yesterday. He's not going to say, even in his 14th year in the NFL, he's not going to dump on the quarterback that's still the starter. If they're all thinking that, then yes, the conversations are being had. Maybe. And if he performs poorly this week, I think he gets benched.
Have you noticed something in the last 48 hours, though, in this argument about him? We're no longer...
The resignation?
We are not... Bingo. We are no longer making arguments anymore about if he can save it and whose fault it is that he's not saving it. We are now having an argument on how to get out of it and the best course of action to get out of it. Again, I brought up, they're going to draft a quarterback the first round next year. That's the quarterback that they can afford and get people excited to be behind and also sell tickets with. So they'll draft a quarterback in the first round. Mark it now. I'll be shocked if they don't. Those quarterbacks have to go and all take a nosedive from here on out for them to not do it. Anybody you mentioned that could be at the top of the draft, I know I have my favorite. I told you Garrett Nussmeier. You name them, they're going to be up there because they might be drafting. If they go out there and they get hammered this week, it very well may be quitting time, and they could go out there and draft at the top of the draft coming up. Now, I don't know if they're going to get the number one, but they're going to have certainly a nice pick about who they want. So they'll either do that. There's also the conversation about how to get out of the contract. Now, people wanted to call in about another thing about how to get out of the contract, which was pretty seedy and things that we didn't really want to talk about. This entire room didn't want to talk about when it came to the lawsuits, when it came to Deshaun Watson. But we had to discuss it because it was a news story. Well, that lawsuit has been taken care of. And they have come to an agreement there, and I don't think the NFL is going to do anything of it. There's the other thought of it, where some people somebody texted me, like, maybe a Brock Osweiler situation. I don't know what team in their right mind would ever go for that. I think Browns fans would line up for something like that okay, we'll give you the picks. We'll go ahead and rid ourselves of this, and you guys can have everything else. I mean, it's $92 million over the next couple of years, but it's not just $92 million over the next couple of years. It's easy to compare him to the Brock Osweiler situation, except it's nowhere near the Brock Osweiler situation. He didn't come in with the baggage. He didn't come in with this entire thought process of, guys, this is going to be a verb. Tell everybody who you mentioned to me. You might not remember this. Do you remember this? The Rick Ankiel, Chuck Knobloch comparison that you made? Like, that's where we're at right now.
Aren't we officially there?
So for a lot of people, yeah. Because there were a lot of folks when they first made the trade going, hey, he ain't going to have it anymore. And honestly, I didn't believe that. I thought that he would come here and he would play much better than what he has. But the conversation, without us maybe even noticing, folks, has shifted from the vigorous defense of the play of Deshaun Watson and whose fault it is other than his. And going after his play and both sides going after each other for that to what's the best course of action to move on. What's the most realistic course of action? Because I ask you, what team would trade for
him? Nobody. No, teams wouldn't even take him for free at this point. because of the baggage too. Like they would take a flyer on somebody, but he's so unpopular. I mean, we just had another lawsuit settled. Like, what team is bringing that on? And now watching him for 3 years not look any better.
I need a big brain person to tell me, because I'm going to tell you this. I know that Andrew Berry is, with a lot of people right now, not their favorite person because of all of this. You talk somebody else in this league into taking him and taking that contract, he should have a lifetime deal here.
Executive of the year?
Forget Anthony Schwartz and forget all the picks. You talk another team into taking him. That's it.
And didn't
you
we
got
say,
your lifetime general manager.
Didn't we say the only chance, the only other team that would maybe take Deshaun Watson was Atlanta? And they wouldn't now.
They got two quarterbacks now.
There's no chance.
They got Kirk Cousins. They got Michael Penix.
That would be the one team. So I think at this stage, maybe if Deshaun took a year off and then put up the highlight reels and got together with his quarterback guru or whatever, that would be the only shot I'd see. But he right now, the way it's looking, I don't think he's...
Too much baggage in the trunk.
I think he's getting benched this week if he plays poorly. And I mean, they are massive underdogs on the road against Philly.
What is the number right now? Was it 7.5?
I thought it was 8.5.
8.5?
Which is just such a big number. And that's against an Eagles team.
You're going to have to bring out the yodeler for the number.
And who the hell believes in the Eagles?
Well, right now, nobody. I mean, they're on the cusp of firing Nick Sirianni if we're talking about firing coaches. Not good. Mitch, please.
All right, guys. Yesterday, we got some sound from former Guardians manager and current Reds manager, Terry Francona, who appeared on Corey Kluber's Casa de Club podcast yesterday. In talking about their days with Cleveland, Tito was asked,
what's the name of the podcast?
Is it not Casa de Club? Did I get that wrong?
You just said it so quickly, I didn't hear you. So go ahead. I'm sorry.
In talking about their days with Cleveland, Tito was asked about the 2019 incident involving Trevor Bauer launching a baseball over the center field wall in Kansas City.
When I walked to the mound and I thought I saw what I saw, and I remember I said to him, like, you know, what the F is wrong with you? And he started to explain, and I think he realized right away that he really screwed up. And I kind of shooed him away, and I said, I'll meet you in the clubhouse. And I always waited on the mound. Tyler Clippard was coming in, and I gave the ball to our catcher, and I said, here, give this ball to Clip. And I went in after Trevor, and we went down on the tunnel, and I was yelling at him so hard, so loud, and so much that I started getting a pain going down my neck that I just stopped and walked away because I thought I was going to have a heart attack. I looked at Trevor, and Trevor's looking at me like, are you done, or is there more? And I just couldn't. I thought I was going to have a heart attack, so I just walked away and went up to the dugout. The funny part was when the inning was over, Clippard comes in, and I'm not in a good place, and he walks right up to me, and he goes, Skip, I think he had something left. And I didn't want to laugh, but I had to.
Oh, Tito. See, that's what you miss, right? That's what you miss. And the fact that...
Good luck to Teats, man.
Trevor Bauer has caused a lot of heartache for a lot of people, and it almost was the manager, like literal heartache.
Let's put some signs together. That was Trevor Bauer's last game as a Cleveland Indian. He was traded to...
Cincinnati.
The Cincinnati Reds.
Oh, my goodness, you're right.
A reunion!
You're right.
Sure, Tito, vouch for him.
I will go down to the ball fields. We are actually playing a tournament in Cincinnati this spring. I will find out what they're saying. Do they want Trevor Bauer back?
That is Cincinnati.
To this day, I will say, and you didn't get to be a part of it because you had other obligations, Kenny, other media obligations.
Yep.
The Trevor Bauer interview was the most in-depth interview I've ever done, and I walked away going, I learned so much.
That extra hour wait in the tunnel was worth it.
I waited in the tunnel for an hour. He came over. He was so nice. If I wanted to go an hour with him, he would have allowed. I was out of questions.
The moment that you asked him about the stick that he used, he was like, oh, this guy gets it, and he became the nicest guy in the world and wanted to do... We could have done a podcast.
He was incredible, and he's been basically blackballed from Major League Baseball.
Well, not over there at the baseball fields at Avon Lake. They ask about him all the time, according to Owen.
I hear it when I'm in Nordonia.
Well, I'm sure he will still be out of baseball next year, and you will still be being asked the questions next year.
Is it too late to pick him up for a possible Game 5 against Google?
Yes, it is. Jim in Strongsville. Hello,
Jimmy.
Ken. Thanks, boys. I appreciate it.
Glad to have you.
Listen, the Browns aren't taking a quarterback in this draft. You know what they're doing? Think about your owner. Your owner is enamored with the Mannings. What do you think this... We tanked 2 years in a row in the past.
Oh, great call. Oh, my God. That's right. However, point, counterpoint. Ready? What did his uncle do?
Oh, he
do you want to sit Jimmy's around and wait?
If Jimmy's as close with Peyton as everybody, I'm not saying I want to wait. I'm just telling you, your owner falls in love with people, and it's over.
So we're definitely not taking Ewers this year.
I don't think so.
Boy, you better make sure you are the number one pick after next year, because they would be. He looks like he's the real deal, Arch Manning.
I'm just saying, he's tanked before. He's already got 1 year tank in him.
He's done it before. He'll do it again.
Thanks, boys.
Thank you, Jim. That's a hell of a point. I didn't think about that, and I remembered somebody brought up Arch Manning as a joke like a couple of weeks ago when they got beat by the Giants. I don't know. They already mix all together. It's only been five games. And that was my thought. I go, well, you remember what his uncle did, and it worked out for his uncle's a Hall of Famer. He won two Super Bowls. It worked out for him.
I saw some other people saying that already, like, there's no way Sanders is going to play for the Browns. There's no way he would come to Cleveland. I'm like, we've had so few instances of this actually happening with quarterbacks. Don't we have two? Is that all we have? Well, Elway.
And Manning.
Manning.
There was the stuff they said about Caleb Williams that I don't know if that's true. About him, like,
well,
wanting a stake of ownership or something like that. Like, you can wish in one hand and you know what in the other. Chuck and Lindhurst, go ahead.
Hey, good morning, guys. Probably some of the other old-timers like myself will remember, but I don't understand why putting a quarterback in for a spark has become such a big deal. And they used to put the second stringer in before halftime. John Madden used to put the emergency quarterback in before the end of the game. George Blanda used to go in there as a third stringer and bring a spark to the team. Now it's become such a controversy to put the backup in. I can't understand it. Well, let me also say what we've said for 55 years. Let me be the first to say it. Wait till next year, fans.
All right, Chuck said it.
Well, he has a nice ring to it.
You got to win tonight, Guardians. Or this afternoon, Guardians, please.
What do you think about day baseball? What do you think? Here we go again. Excited about it?
Tremendous fan of day baseball. Are you kidding? 3 o'clock today?
Saw some people complaining. There's four games today.
Welcome to my world.
In Major League Baseball.
Coach Owen might be a little late to practice tonight, guys.
Uh-oh.
5:30 practice. Let's wrap her up by 5:30.
I had to do the 5 and the 6, and I was late to practice on Monday, and I wondered if the other coaches thought I was watching the game, and that's why I was late. I was like, there is video evidence of me working. But still, I don't know what they're texting about me behind my back. Don't think I haven't noticed. Big thanks to everybody who joined us today. Zach Meisel, excellent as always. I mean, just scrum-trelescent.
Like Thursday, 6:08.
He says Guardians.
Might have to cancel Thursday practice.
He says Guardians in 4. So there you go. Also, big thanks to everybody who joined us for Around the AFC North. They all said they'd bench Deshaun Watson. Go Guardians. For Big Country, for Jeff, for Mitch, for the slippery wizard Anthony Lima, I'm Ken Carman. Have a wonderful day, my friends. Go Guardians!